Good morning and welcome to the coffee table. Here on listener-supported public radio, KBBI Homer, I'm Kathleen Gustafson. This week, hear local history told live. Welcome to Homestead, kids. Tales from the North Fork. This program was recorded live on December 12th at the Islands and Ocean Visitor Center at the annual meeting for the Kachemak Heritage Land Trust. You'll hear from Homestead kids Terry Epperson Harrington, Al Poindexter, Mary Hackinson Perry, Joyce Anderson Turkington, and it starts with the moderator, Lynn Whitmore.
When I first was asked to do this, I thought, boy, I better get an attention getter so I can get everybody to listen to us. So I went and looked around. I said, I need to talk to an old Anchor Point Homestead kids. I like that. We're kids. And so I fished with this old guy named Steve Wally. And he was afraid I was going to insult him while I was up here, but I wouldn't insult a 175-year-old fisherman. And so I said, well, tell me some, you know, what was the big issues in those days? Because, you know, we have a pretty nice life. We're living at a really good time on this earth, and things were tougher back then. He says, well, transportation was one of them. I said, what do you mean? He says, well, if you had an issue and you had to go to the hospital, you got in the farm tractor, you drove across Starisky Creek, his family homestead, and had a fish trap at the mouth of the Starisky Creek. And then you drove down to the Anchor River and you crossed that, and then you drove the beach all the way to the mouth of Beluga Slough, where you caught the mailboat, and then you took the mailboat over to the hospital in Seldovia. And that's what it was like. I see a few old gray heads nodding out there. And so when you got through all that stuff, I said, well, where was your first school? And I was really surprised at this one. He said it was on the south side of the Anchor River, across what's now the bridge below the Anchor River Inn, sitting in that little flat spot across from where the beach road is, in a bunch of cottonwood trees now. And I said, well, how'd you get to school from Anchor Point? You would have thought they'd put the school on the Anchor Point side. And he says, well, you either waded the river or you took the farm tractor across. And I said, well, how long was the school there? And he said, well, it flooded out regularly, so they moved it. At the fish trap, they had big fish trap poles sitting out in the inlet where they would move fish into the inlet. And he said, one of the big issues was keeping those poles around. And he says, you couldn't find big, tall trees around Anchor Point. The spruce bark beetles and the fires had killed them all. Kind of sounds familiar, doesn't it? He said they had to go across Cook Inlet to get their tall trees and their poles to run that fish trap. And he said, you know how they called Whiskey Gulch, Whiskey Gulch? And if you guys don't know where that's at, just north of Anchor Point a little ways, there's a popular recreation area down there. Two old miners set up camp down there and they were trying to scratch a living out down there, and they were having a hard time making it, so they decided they needed to put a still in and run the still. One night they got into their product a little bit, got into the mercury vapors accidentally, and they both died, and so they named it Whiskey Gulch. The thing that stunned me the most, he said there was a bounty on a few things that kind of surprised me. He said it was 2.5 cents for every Dolly Varden tail you could turn in. Some people remember that. That was amazing. And $3 for the front left foot of a snowy owl. They probably don't have too many back feet. $3 for the left foot of a bald eagle. $3 for the nose of a seal. And then you could get $30 for the front left foot of a coyote, and $50 for a wolf. But he said there were no wolves around here, and his grandmother said the wolves left a long time ago. Well, as you know, they're back now. There's a pretty good chance we all wouldn't be around here if it wasn't for these families. And they had no lines of communication. They had no television, just hard work and hardships. I guess you could just introduce yourself.
I'm Joyce Anderson Turkington. My family's property today, this is in the Hidden Hills area. And my brother David owns the property now and ran elk out there. So if you've been out that road, when we first came out there, we landed here in Anchor Point, and we would come up around Epperson Knob, and we would come across the top. Once we established our home here, we would park at the Anchor River on the south end of the North Fork Loop, and we would cross the river and then go up along the hillside. Kenny Jant owned the property, and we went up and then got to our house. It was about 4.5 miles, but that's where I grew up.
Oh, I'm Al Poindexter. I am part of a group of siblings. There are 6 of us. There was one girl in the bunch, and I'd like to point her out. Stand up, Linda. She's a lot better storyteller than I am, but the reason why I'm up here and she's down there is because they said you got to have a guy at the table, so here I am. We ended up leaving the Norfolk Road, which was a muddy trail at the time, and we kind of followed the seismograph trail.
I'm Mary Hawkinson Perry, and my parents were Lionel and Esther Hawkinson. We were just about a mile out of Anchor Point. The North Fork Road was not great, but we certainly had nothing like these other folks did to contend with as far as getting to our property. And my dad filed on 40 acres, and so we had a 40-acre farm.
I'm Terry Epperson Harrington, and I grew up right, well, it says Epperson up there. That was our homestead. And we kind of built the road kind of clear up there. It was quite a long ways. But I grew up there for most of my teenage years.
Okay, so Joyce, tell us how your family got here. What brought them here?
In 1958, my family was living in New Mexico, Arizona, in the Four Corners area. My uncle, Elvin Lewis, who lost 2 of his ranches to the Navajo Dam that went in that area, and he wanted to get as far away from government as he could. So in 58, he and a couple of my uncles came up and looked around, and being ranchers and being here in the summer and seeing Red Top being 6 foot high, they were in cattle heaven, they thought. And so they went back to New Mexico, and there were 5 families of us that all came up together. There were the Lewises, Elvin Lewis and his son Milton, who had just gotten married, my uncle Jimmy Wilson and his wife Virginia and their 2 children, Gary and Naoma Presley. The Wilsons and the Presleys ended up in Happy Valley, and then my folks. And we were in Nilchik the first year, and the little cabin that we had was 12 by 20, and it was the main hub of the families. There were little outbuildings that everybody slept in, but everyone ate, and our family slept in that little 12 by 20. And then we moved after that. The next year, we had to have a place to go and to take our cattle. So my father, Elton Anderson, went to the state and parked on their doorstep and told him he had to have a place to take his cattle, and he wound up getting the first grazing lease on the peninsula, and he got a 55-year, automatically 55, but the family didn't get the benefits of the 55 because the land sold to Siri, and that deal was off. But then we moved out on the North Fork, and the first year that we rented a place in Anchor Point, a little cabin just before you go down the hill to the river on the right. And then we rented a place, it was the Wozencrafts just past where you turn to Nikolaevus now. And we had a cabin there, and in the spring that burned down. And so we children were farmed out to families in Anchor Point. My mom and dad went on up to our property on the North Fork to start building our cabin, which was a 1-room cabin with big logs. I can still remember my dad having the ramps up, rolling the logs up to put it up, and that's where we spent our growing up years with our family and cattle and my 3 older brothers, and then we had a baby brother during that time too. So
one of the things that kind of surprised me was it was pretty rare for the folks to just settle into one spot and stay right there. They kind of had to find their place here. So, Al, how did you guys work your way here?
Well, our immigration to Anchor Point is kind of complicated. Like my dad said, I'm going to tell you a story. He said, pull up a stump right up here next to the fire, and let me tell you a story. So our goal, when we moved into Anchor Point, we were running a chicken farm in Seward and found out about a land auction in 1961. My father and I and one of my brothers, we trekked over to Anchor Point and went to the land auction, and we walked into the community club, and the place was full of people with cowboy hats and cowboy boots. Some of them had six shooters strapped to their side. And I thought, whoa, we stepped into the Wild West. We ended up buying a section of land, happened to be right where Nikolaevsk is now. So we trekked out there to find the corners and found out it was a swamp. And that's not what brought us over here. It was all the grass, because my dad knew that was a gold mine. You can't eat grass, but if you feed cows the grass, you can feed the cows and then sell them and make money. And so that was the goal. We moved 100 head of bummer calves that we got from the dairies out of Palmer to Anchor Point. We ended up having to carry them, half of them, on our backs, and we were bottle feeding them. So that was one of our chores. We were bottle feeding calves. Then it started raining. And our job, Linda's job, my job, everybody's job, was to keep track of the cows. We didn't have any fence. We didn't have a barn. We didn't have anything except a bunch of stupid cows that wanted to go everywhere else but where they were supposed to be. So our job was to get out, round them up, make sure they got on good fresh grass every day. And then it started raining. We didn't know what rain gear was. And we didn't have cowboy boots. And we didn't have cowboy hats. And so, consequently, we got soaking wet every day, all day long. I got to thinking about that. My dad must have not done a very good job of planning, because he kept telling us we were going to be cowboys. In fact, he called us cowboys and cowgals. All summer long, we were out there in our Converse All-Stars, up to our knees in muck, chasing cows. And we started calling ourselves the Tennis Shoe Cowboys. That's sort of what brought us here to Anchor Point. I'll let it go at that.
So, Mary, do you have a story, anything like that?
My parents didn't come up to Alaska to come to Anchor Point. My mom came up in 1935 with the Matanuska colonization program as a teenager, came up with her family and settled in Palmer. And then Dad came in 1937 to mine gold, and that didn't work out so well. He tried to mine gold, but he ended up becoming a sheet metal worker and met Mom, and they got married during the war and lived in Anchorage until 1955. And by that time, they had seven kids on a small city lot. And then Dad happened to hear one day about this guy who had a homestead he was trying to get rid of. And so in Anchor Point. Well, we had come down a couple times because the Anchor River was the big draw for Dad. He loved to fish. So he talked Mom into it, and her big thing was getting the seven kids off of a city lot and into a little more space. And so that's what brought our family to Anchor Point.
And Terry, you've got a pretty interesting story.
My family came up from Los Angeles, California, in 1954. Kind of started all, though, in 1953, my dad and his two brothers decided that they wanted to get some of this free homestead land up in Alaska. All they had to do was live on it for 5 years and improve upon it, build a cabin, do some clearing. So that sounded easy enough. So in 53, my two uncles packed up their truck with everything they thought they might need, tractors and parts and engines and who knows, and drove up the Alcan, and they ended up in Inilchik. And in Inilchik, they ran into this guy named Goggins. And Mr. Goggins says, well, I happen to have a homestead in Happy Valley that I'll sell you. Well, okay, this sounds good. So he took us out to his cabin. And there was a little log cabin on this property, and it was about a mile off the highway. And there was sort of a trailish road in there. You couldn't drive it in the breakup, but my two uncles checked it out and says, well, this looks like a really good place. How about if we meet up with you next year and we'll settle the deal. And Goggins says, sure, that'll be fine. Why don't you just leave all your stuff here on the property? So my uncles went back to Los Angeles, and then the spring of 54, my dad and his younger brother drove back up in that same truck, loaded to the hilt with everything they could think of, and they towed a Willie's Jeep, Army Jeep, along behind the truck. Finally got to Nanilchik and went out to Goggins' cabin and set up their tent by the road and went looking for Goggins to let him know that he was there. There was no Goggins anywhere. It didn't look like the property had even been lived in. They went in town and they asked around, and the people in Nanilchik says, well, we haven't seen him for about 6 months, but the rumor is that he's in jail. And by the way, he doesn't own that property anyway. So my dad and his brother looked around, broke into the Goggins cabin and looked around for all the stuff that they'd left with him last year, and it was all gone. So they got kind of shafted on that deal. So Dad filed on a homestead that was a little bit further out from that one, decided he didn't want us to live in that cabin another winter, so he got a home site in Nanilchik, right across from the Nanilchik School, built us a little tiny slab board house there. It was a pretty tiny little thing, and then finally gave up the Happy Valley homestead. It was too hard to clear and to build on, and ended up finding the Anchor Point homestead up at the Upper Sanab area. And him, my two uncles, and my grandmother each filed on 160 acres up there, and that's how come we ended up in Anchor Point.
Joyce, what was your house like? What was your, the final product?
Well, I'm going to regress a little bit, because you might be wondering, Linda came up and asked Al what this spam was sitting here for, and I forgot to tell you about that. When we came up in 59, the men all came up with, like Terry, they loaded up trucks and trailers and brought horses and tractors and everything that you could need for houses and building and all of that kind of stuff. And they came early in May, and in June, when school was out, the end of June, the women and the children all came up, and we drove a pickup and a sedan. And so my cousin and his new bride drove the pickup, and the boys, the four young boys, rode in the back of the pickup. They had a camper over it. And the sedan, the three girls and the women drove in that. But halfway through Canada, we broke down, and the pickup had to go on into Alaska to get help. And we were there for 3 weeks, and this was our staple. And to this day, I cannot eat Spam. And so when we were doing this, Al brought me a present. So what was our house like? Was that the question?
Yes, how much Spam did you have?
I don't know. It was a lot. You got tired of it when you were eating it for at least two meals a day.
So your home and your chores. We've heard Al's chores.
Okay. Home and the chores. Our home on the North Fork was just one cabin. I'm not really sure the dimensions of it. It probably was at least 15 by 30. I don't know where my dad got the logs, but I just remember them being huge logs. Every once in a while, someone would show up as the logs went up to help him, and the main beam on the top that the roof rested on. I remember there were a few guys that came out and helped my dad get that up, because my mom and the boys just couldn't quite help him to get that up. It was a one-room cabin. We had the kitchen and then kind of a living room area. And of course, in those days, we didn't have bedrooms, and you didn't divide the bedrooms up. The way the bedroom was divided was you had the clothes hung down the middle of the room and your dressers, and mom and dad were on one side and the kids were on the other side. And our chores were, in those days, you had to haul the water from the creek. My dad always used to say, we've got running water, the kids run down and get it. So we had to haul water, and when it was wash day, then we had to bring the water up. We had to heat it on the stove, and we had an old wringer washer outside that we would wash and have to hang up. And we had cows that had to be fed and milked, and chickens to be taken care of. And when I was 10, my youngest brother, Jim Anderson, was born. And that was kind of my job, to take care of Jim as mother was doing her things. And invariably, the horses would get lost, and they would be way off down towards the Chaycock, and she would go off down through there looking for horses by herself, and I would beg her, Mother, please don't go. The bears are going to get you, and we're not going to come look for you. But she would go anyway. She wasn't afraid of anything. Always had lots of chores to do, but my mom was a person that always wanted to make things fun. When we had to do chores, we were singing or we were outside doing things, and so we always had playtime and had, even though we worked hard, we played hard too.
So, Al, tell us about your home, and then it seems like you had an interesting story about the sleeping arrangements.
After one winter out there in the hills, in that cabin, we ended up squatting in different places around Anchor Point, but none of those places were any better than the one we had in the hills, and it was just made out of real small logs. The cracks between the logs were bigger than logs, and the gable ends, when we're trying to get those up, my brother said it's like stacking BBs until we got the ridge pole across. But anyway, the cabin out there, it had rough planks, and there's cracks about as wide as the planks on the floor. We had a barrel stove in the center of the house. It was a one-room deal. My parents' bed was in one corner, and we had a cook stove up against the wall, wood cook stove, and then we had a little loft up above, and that's where all of us kids slept. And we ended up being able to identify each other's toes with our nose and so forth. At night, it's interesting, because at night, you know, we close up the stove, and it was really hot up there in the loft when we went to bed, because we had the fire blazing hot. And the reason why we had the fire blazing hot is because at the end of the day, we came in and we rang out, peeled off our tennis shoes and rang out our socks, and we hung those socks above the stove on a wire, hoping it would dry out before morning. We only had one pair of socks. We only had one pair of tennis shoes, and that was it. So anyway, we'd crawl up in the loft, and we kind of spread out a little bit because it's so hot, and I would squeeze up against the logs and pull some moss out from between the cracks so I could get some air. And then as the night went on and the stove cooled down and everything cooled down, then we were fighting over army blankets and army sleeping bags, and end up in the morning all kind of laying on top of each other trying to stay warm. So in the morning we'd get up, get ready to start the day, and so then we had to put on those crusty, muddy, half dry, half wet socks back into those wet tennis shoes and do it all over again. So to this day, I am waiting to get a dump truck, and I'm going to fill it up with socks. Chores. I got to do chores. The natural chores was to carry water. We did that. And we chopped wood, we split wood, and we filled up the cabin with wood as much as we could, because my dad would spend the rest of the day, next day, just burning it up anyway. We had to feed cows in the wintertime, so we spent a good portion of our day, when it wasn't raining, cutting hay. And we'd all line up in a staggered row, and we'd go down the field cutting hay, and then we turn around and come back the other way. It ended up being a pretty wide swath. And after a few days, we built rakes out of a 2x4 and a big long handle. And then we'd go out after it was dry, after a couple days, if it hadn't rained for the last month. And we'd rake it all up into a windrow. And then we'd go down the windrow with an old tractor, usually when it ran, and pitched it onto a wagon. And then we had haystacks all over the place. So that was another one of our chores.
It's a good thing my life wasn't nearly as exciting as yours, Al. Our original cabin, the one that the previous owner built, and that's what we moved into when we came down. It was, I think it was 12 by 16, something like that. And like everybody else's, it was one room with a ladder nailed to one wall and a small attic. So the six of us older kids were up in the attic. That was where we slept. Mom and Dad had a bed, and then Mom had a box that she fixed up as a crib for my five-month-old brother when we that's how old he was when we moved down. And then shortly after, but that we moved down on Labor or Memorial Weekend, and through that first summer, I can't say we because I was 4 years old. I didn't have much to do with the building, but my mother and my brothers, my older brothers, pretty much put on the first addition to the cabin. Dad worked in Anchorage, so he was home on the weekends, and we had an area we called the woodlot, and he would fell a bunch of trees. And then my older brother's job during the week was to use a drawing knife, is that what it's called, and skin the logs. The one brother was 9 and the other was 7. My chores were like bringing in the kindling and or the wood. That was another chore of my older brother's, was come home from school and start chopping wood. And that was just a daily thing for everybody, was chopping wood. And we were fortunate, I guess, because we didn't have to go down to a creek to get water. The previous owner had dug a well in the corner of the cabin, and we had a hand pump on it, so we were able to get water right there in the cabin, so we had it pretty easy.
Terry, what were your chores like? What was your home like?
When I came to Alaska, I was only 7, and so I didn't have very many chores when I was younger, but the cabin that my dad fixed up that belonged to supposedly Mr. Goggins, I fixed it up for my mom and my brother and I to live in, and it, like Al said, there was cracks between the logs and you could see daylight through them. It was just one big old room. We heated it with a big old monster stove. There was an outhouse that we used, and of course we were pretty poor, and there was no stores nearby or anything, so we would shop through Sears Roebuck catalog or the Montgomery Ward catalog. When the catalogs got old and the new ones came along, those catalogs ended up in the outhouse. So that was what we had to use. And then when we got into the Nanilchik cabin, that little cabin was just, Dad just threw it up with boards and it didn't have any insulation. And kind of like Al had mentioned and Joyce too, there was no insulation in it. And so I can remember waking up in the morning sometimes and my blankets and sheets would be frozen to the walls. And you'd kind of have to yank on them to get them thawed out so you could get out of bed. Then finally, when we moved into the Norfolk house, it was a little bigger, a little nicer. Dad actually segregated out part of the house and made 2 rooms for bedrooms. They were small and they didn't have doors on them, but that was the first time that we actually had bedrooms that whole time. And of course, in all these houses, there was no, we had to run to the creek to get water and no electricity and of course no modern conveniences, indoor plumbing or anything. So my chores though, when, like I guess I didn't have many chores when I was younger that I can remember, but once we moved up on the North Fork, every Saturday was wash day, and like Joyce said, they'd bring out the wringer washer machine, and before electricity they'd crank up the generator and heat up water, well, haul it up from the creek first and then heat up the water on the stove. And I was responsible for hanging the clothes out and bringing them in later. All year long, I had to do that. And in the middle of the winter time, I'd hang those clothes out and freeze my hands off. Then in the afternoon, I'd have to go bring them in, and most of the time they were frozen stiff, so I'd have to bring them in and prop them up against the furniture till they finally thawed out, and then I had to fold them and put them away. And then another chore that I can recall was I always had to be the one to churn the butter. We had cows, and so we'd wait till the cream settled on top of the milk jugs and skim it off and put it in the butter churn. And I don't know, I can remember churning butter for an hour. My hands would be so tired by the time I finished churning butter. But those are the only chores I can really remember.